welcome to Holy Friday here at the table at Central United Methodist Church. We gather this evening with followers of Jesus around the world to mark and remember Jesus's death on the cross, and we are grateful to be in this together with each of you, those gathering here in person and those online as well. My name is Matt Smith, and along with Linda Duhirsu, we serve as the co-pastors, and tonight Chloe McKellier is online as our host for those who are with us in worship online, and we encourage you to reach out to her in the chat if you have questions. Chloe may be using my account online, so you'll reach out to Chloe either through hers or through my account. Those of us that are gathered here, we want to make an invitation, and that is this, that as our worship closes tonight, we'll move out into the world. And as we move into that final song, when it closes, you will see us, Pastor Linda and myself and our music team, we'll come here to the table, and near the cross, we have placed a symbol that we'd invite you to take with you if you feel led or moved. And we encourage you, there are some black or dark gray symbols and purple as well. So we'd invite you as we close worship to make your way to the cross and to take that as you move out into the world. I invite those of us in the sanctuary to remain seated as we move into this Holy Friday worship together, weaving song with readings and prayer and silence and a message. This is our music team taking us into the heart of Holy Friday with Does Your Heart Break?
When the walls fell and the hungry child cried out for help, did you hear the sound? Did your heart break? Does your heart break now? Does your heart break?
It is the destruction of the world in our own lives that drives us half insane, and more than half. To destroy that which we were given in trust, how will we bear it? It is our own bodies that we give to be broken, our bodies existing before and after us in clod and cloud, worm and tree, that we, driving or driven, despise in our greed to live, our haste to die. To have lost wantonly the ancient forests, the vast grasslands in our madness, the presence in our very bodies of our grief.
Crucified my Lord.
invite you to be seated. We are going to weave the verses to "Were You There?" together with our reading this evening. And I want to give those of us in the sanctuary in person permission to move as you feel led or moved throughout the evening, really, but especially during the music and during the reading. There are places to pray both on the sides of the sanctuary and in the back. Our reading tonight comes from the Gospel of John, chapters 18 and 19, and we'll be sharing from the First Nations translation, and we encourage you to follow along either on the screen or to share with your own Bibles or those in the pews if you want to see an alternative translation. When he finished sending up his prayers, he and the ones who walked the road with him walked across the valley of darkness and entered a garden with many olive trees. Speaks well of Judas, the betrayer, knew about this place because Creator Sets Free would often go there with his followers. The betrayer came into the garden, and with him came a band of lodge soldiers sent from the scroll keepers, head holy men, and separated ones, Pharisees, representing the elders of the grand council. The air was filled with the smell of burning torches as they entered the garden carrying clubs and long knives. Creator Sets Free knew all this would happen, yet he turned to the soldiers and asked, "Who have you come for?" With one voice, they answered back, "Creator Sets Free from Seed Planter Village." The betrayer, speaks well of, was standing there with the lodge soldiers when Creator Sets Free answered, "I am he." At the sound of his voice, they all moved back and fell to the ground. He asked them again, "Who have you come for?" They answered, "Creator Sets Free from Seed Planter Village." "I told you already, I'm the one you're looking for," he said. "Let these other men go." He said this to fulfill his promise, "None of the ones you gave to me have been lost." Right then, stands on the rock, drew his long knife from its sheath, and cut off the right ear of the servant of the chief holy man. The servant's name was Chieftain. Creator Sets Free turned to Stands on the Rock and cried out, "Enough of this. Put your long knife back in its sheath. Shall I not drink the cup of suffering my Creator has asked of me?" The lodge soldiers, along with their head soldier and the Grand Council representatives, took hold of Creator Sets Free, tied him securely with cowhide straps, and took him first to Walks Humbly, one of the high holy men. He was the father of the wife of Hollow in the Rock, Caiaphas, the chief holy man who had advised the Grand Council by saying, "It will be better if one man dies for all the people." Stands on the Rock and one other follower had been watching from a distance, and since this follower was known by the chief holy man, he entered the courtyard of the house, but Stands on the Rock stood outside the gate. This follower spoke to the gatekeeper, a young woman, who then let Stands on the Rock in. She said to him, "Are you not one of his followers?" "No," he told her, "I am not." The night was growing cold, so some of the men, along with the soldier guards from the lodge, built a fire in the courtyard to keep warm. Stands on the Rock stood there with them, trying to stay warm. Back inside, the chief holy man began to question Creator Sets Free about his followers and his teachings. Creator Sets Free said to him, "I have spoken openly to all. I've spoken openly in the gathering houses and the sacred lodge. I said nothing in secret. Why ask me? Ask the ones who heard me. They'll know." One of the head soldiers struck him in the face and said, "Is this how you answer a chief holy man?" Creator Sets Free answered him back, "If I have spoken wrongly, tell me what I said wrong. If I spoke what is true, then by what right do you strike me? Walks humbly, decided to send Creator sets free to hollow in the rock the chief holy man. So they took him, still bound by ropes, to hollow in the rock. Outside in the courtyard, stands on the rock, was still warming himself by fire. The others asked him, "Are you not one of his followers?" "You are not, are you?" "No," stands on the rock, denied. I am not." One of the servants of the chief holy man, a relative of the man whose ear had been cut off, looked at him and said, "Yes, you are. I saw you in the garden with him." Stands on the rock, shook his head in denial. And right then, a rooster began to crow. Seated. Chapter 18 continues. Creator Sets Free was taken from the house of Hollow in the Rock to the lodge of the governor of the people of Iron, Romans. The tribal leaders stayed outside, for they did not want to become ceremonially unclean by going inside. It was early in the morning, and many of them had not yet eaten the ceremonial meal of Passover. Spear of the Great Waters, Pilate, came outside to meet them. They took Creator Sets Free and stood him before Spear of the Great Waters. He took a good, long look at him, and then turned back to the crowd. "What has this man done wrong?" he asked them. "If he were not a criminal, would we not have brought him to you?" they answered. "Take him away." Spear of the Great Waters said to them, "Use your own law to decide what to do." "Our tribal law will not permit us to put him to death," they answered. This proved that Creator Sets Free was right when he told them how he would die: by being nailed to a tree pole, the cross. Spear of the Great Waters went back into his lodge and had Creator Sets Free brought to him so he could question him in private. Once inside, he said to him, "Are you the chief of the tribes of wrestles with Creator?" "Is this your question?" Creator Sets Free asked. "Or are you listening to others?" "I am not from your tribes," Spear of the Great Waters answered. "It is your own people and their head holy men who have turned you over to me. What have you done?" "My way of ruling is a good road. It is not in the ways of this world. If it were, my followers would have fought to keep me from being captured." "So then, you are a chief," he said back to him. "It is you who have said it," Creator Sets Free answered. "I was born for this and have come into the world for this purpose, to tell about the truth. The ones who belong to the truth will listen to my voice." Spear of the Great Waters shook his head and said, "What is truth?" Then Spear of the Great Waters went outside to the tribal leaders and said to them, I find no guilt in this man. By your own tradition, we set free one criminal during your Passover festival. Do you want me to release Creator Sets Free, your chief? No, not him, the crowd roared back. Release son of his father. Son of his father was a troublemaker who has caused an uprising. Spear of the Great Waters turned Creator Sets Free over to his soldiers to have him beaten. Chapter 19 continues. The soldiers twisted together a headdress from a thorn bush, pressed the thorns into his head, and wrapped a purple chief blanket around him. They bowed down before him, making a big show of it, and kept mocking him, saying, "Honor, honor to the great chief of the tribes of wrestles with Creator." They took turns hitting him on his face until he was bruised and bloodied. Spear of the Great Waters stood before the crowd again and said, I bring to you the one in whom I have found no guilt. Creator Sets Free was brought forward, blood flowing down his bruised face. He was wearing the headdress of thorns and the purple chief blanket that was wrapped around him. Behold the man, Spear of the Great Waters said to them. Take a good, long look at him. And the crowd stared at him in stunned silence. But then the head holy man and the lodge guards began to shout, Death! Death on the cross. Then take him and kill him yourselves, Spear of the Great Waters said to them. I find no guilt in him. They answered him back, Our law tells us he must die, for he has represented himself as the son of the Great Spirit. When Spear of the Great Waters heard this, his fear grew stronger, so he took Creator Sets Free back inside his lodge. Who are you and where are you from? He questioned him. Creator Sets Free stood there and remained silent. Speak to me. Do you not know I have the power of life and death over you? I can have you killed or set free, he warned. Have you nothing to say? The only power you have is what you have been given you from above, he answered. The ones who turned you over to me carry the greater guilt. spear of the great waters, tried harder to have creator sets free, release, but the people would not have it. They stood their ground saying, if you release a man who says he is a chief, you are not honoring the rule of your people, for anyone who claims to be a chief challenges his power. When spear of the great waters heard this, he took creator sets free and went to the stone of deciding called Gabbatha in the tribal language and sat down. It was now midday on the day of preparation for the Passover festival. He brought creator sets free before the people and said, here is your chief. Take him away. Take him away, the crowd shouted with one voice. Nail him to the cross. Would you have me nail your chief to the cross? He asked them. This time the head holy men answered back, we have no other chief than the ruler of the people of iron. Spear of the great waters then turned creator sets free over to the soldiers to have him put to death on a tree pole, the cross. So they took him away. As an aside, in the First Nations translation, we learn the cross was an instrument of torture and terror used by the people of iron to strike fear in the hearts of any who dared to rise up against their empire. The victim's hands and feet would be pierced with large iron nails, fastening them to the cross. The victims would hang there, sometimes for days, until they were dead. This was one of the most cruel and painful ways to die ever devised by human beings. And John continues, the soldiers placed the wooden crossbeam on his back and forced him to carry it to the place where he would be executed. Creator sets free carried the crossbeam to the place of the skull, which is called Golgotha in the tribal language. There they nailed his hands and feet to the cross along with the two others and placed his cross between the two of them. Spear of the great waters fastened a sign to the top of the cross where they attached the crossbeam with these words written on it. Creator sets free from seed planters village, chief of the tribes of wrestles with creator. This was near Village of Peace so that many of the tribal members could read it. The sign was written in Aramaic, the tribal language, but also in Latin and Greek, the languages of the people of iron. The chief head holy men and the tribal leaders said to Spear of the Great Waters, do not write chief of the tribes. Instead, write, he said he is chief. But he answered, what I have written will stand. The soldiers stripped his clothes from him. When they nailed his hands and feet to the cross, they tore one of his garments into four pieces, one for each guard. His long outer garment was woven together into one piece. So they said, let us not tear this. We can draw straws for it. This gave full meaning to the sacred teachings that said, they divided my clothes between them and gambled for my garment. This is what the soldiers did as they kept watch over creator sets free. Standing near the cross was Bitter Tears, Mary, the mother of creator sets free, who had come to see him along with her sister.
Were you there?
standing near the cross was bitter tears. The mother of Creator sets free, who had come to see him along with her sister. Two other women also came with her, brooding tears. The wife of Traitor, and strong tears from Creator's high lodge. He shows goodwill. The much loved follower of Creator Sets Free was also there with them. When Creator Sets Free looked down and saw them, he said to his mother, "Honored woman, look to your son." And then he said to his follower, "Look to your mother." From that time, the follower took bitter tears into his family and cared for her. Creator Sets Free, knowing he had done all the ancient sacred teachings had foretold, said, "I thirst." There was a vessel of sour and bitter wine standing nearby. One of the soldiers dipped a cloth in it to soak up some of the wine. He wrapped the cloth around the tip of a hyssop branch and held it up to the mouth of Creator Sets Free. He then tasted the bitter wine, turned his head to the sky, and cried out loud, "It is done." He then lowered his head to his chest, and with his last breath, gave up his spirit. Creator Sets Free was dead.
Thank you. Thank you, Natalie. For the last 6 weeks, those of us here in person and online have been taking in, following, contemplating, praying, listening, arguing with the poetry and prose of Wendell Berry. He writes this: Sabbath observance invites us to stop. It invites us to rest. It asks us to notice that while we rest, the world continues without our help. It invites us to delight in the world's beauty and abundance. And it's been a beautiful journey, at least for me, for many others I know, because so many of you have shared notes and comments and texts with me along the journey of Lent. And now it's time to do what we do on Holy Friday. We listen to the ancient story. We watch as those closest companions, the closest ones to Jesus, abandon him. And the empire is the one who takes him at his word. In short, we gather to view the destruction around the cross. How will we bear it? Suffering is woven throughout our biblical story, and I hope that's not a surprise to anyone, but for some, it still may be. A friend reminded me this week that we don't do suffering too well here in the first world. We're highly defended against it mostly. Makes sense. Human suffering threatens all networks of meaning. We know how to relieve suffering. We know how to evade suffering. What we find challenging is acknowledging that suffering is as much a part of life as anything else. There are just some kinds of suffering that come with being human. Ask a woman about to give birth. Wendell Berry, the writer and farmer, ecologist, activist, wrote an essay some time ago. It's titled Damage. And in it, it tells the story of a hillside that's located on his land. Wendell wanted to be able to graze livestock there occasionally, but no water source was there to make that possible. So he hired a person with a bulldozer to form a small pond on a shelf on the hillside. And all appeared to be successful. And the pond, well, it began to form, and soon it became full enough to support a few head of livestock, just what he wanted. And while that was happening, Wendell went about his work to responsibly heal the land where the bulldozer had cut into it and wounded it. He used, he said, fertilizer with grass and clover seed, which he sowed into the earth. Over time, he knew this would grow and the pond would become and look like it was part of the natural way of things. And it was a wet fall and a wet winter. And along came the freezing and the thawing, and with it came the rains. And he writes, the earthwork slumped, and a large slice of the wood's floor on the upside slipped down into the pond. In general, he says, I have used my farm carefully. It could be said, I think, that I have improved it more than I have damaged it. Improved more than damaged. The truth is, we have actually relieved so much suffering, some of us begin to believe it doesn't have to exist. That's an illusion. And Wendell Berry reminds us, my aim has been to go against its history and to repair the damage of other people. But now a part of its damage is my own. I have carried it out. Before my own eyes and against my intention, a part of the modern tragedy. I have made a lasting flaw in the face of the earth for no lasting good. To have lost, he writes, wantonly, the ancient forests, the vast grasslands in our madness, the presence in our very bodies of our grief. Until that wound in the hillside, Wendell's place is healed, he says there will be something impaired in his mind. His peace is damaged, and he says, I will not be able to forget it. Oh, but we will try. We all bring all our core values to bear on this problem. Because it's quite a shock to the system when the trying isn't welcomed. We're so well-meaning. Or when things take a turn, as in the case of Wendell Berry and his pond. When we try to step in and relieve suffering, and it isn't welcomed, it can be a startle. And in that moment, maybe we recognize, often many of us, that's the moment when we take a step back. You're not going to let me fix it? Fine. Or we take a lot of steps back. We take cover behind our defenses. Where do you go to escape your suffering? Where do you go to ignore the suffering of your neighbor? It used to be that Wendell Berry could take cover in art. He said he believed that a person could find refuge from suffering in the perfections of art. And he wrote this, one could read a good poem, or better, write one. I am no longer able to think that way. That is because I now live in my subject. My subject is my place in the world. I live in my place. If I've damaged my subject, he writes, then I have damaged my art. What aspired to be whole has met damage face to face and has come away wounded. And in that woundedness, it accepts the clarification of pain and concerns itself with healing. It cultivates the scar that is the course of time and nature over damage, the landmark and the mind mark that is the notation of a limit. To lose the scar of knowledge is to renew the wound. An art that heals and protects its subject is a geography of scars. Poet artist William Blake writes this, you never know what is enough unless you know what is more than enough. Friends, to live in our subjects. All of God's creation is groaning from the scars we have inflicted upon her. The current leading cause of death among children 0 to 18 years of age in the United States is not disease, not car accidents anymore. We fixed that. It is gun violence. To destroy that which we were given in trust, how will we bear it? Suffering can be a great killer of faithfulness, and it can compress our souls into knots of pain which explode. It explodes out into fear and like bitterness and hatred onto everyone and everything around us. Or it is the truth that saves our lives. And here it is. Suffering does not have to destroy us. It's our defenses, our fear, and our evasion that do that. There is a way in which suffering can make us actually indestructible by connecting us, by joining us to the crucified one whose wounds cut the heart of God and broke through to new life. That's the promise. That's it. The cross that points the way from death to life. No fire, no fury. From death into life, in service to that promised truth. May we give our hearts again and again and again.
The brittle leaves from the conversation I'd had, the one that left me disillusioned, almost in a panic, and I tossed them in a pile in the corner of my garden, where things once forgotten go to. Try to move on. I've never been one to sit still, waiting for too long. Then I go to the corner of my garden, and I find this conversation forgotten beneath the pile of things my heart's discarded, things too painful to show, but my body still knows they're there. No, the body doesn't lie. If it's buried deep inside, it'll spill out sideways. If release, it doesn't find. I've tried to move on. My body's gonna force me to listen. Once forgotten. I'll turn and I'll turn and I'll turn, I'll turn, I'll turn that pile, composting grief. Yes, I'll turn and I'll turn and I'll turn, I'll turn, I'll turn that pile, composting.
Invite us to just hold the silence with God who composts grief. Wounded healer and composting God, we pause on this night, a night in which hearts tremble. As we prepare to go into the stillness of night and into the silence of Saturday with holy uncertainty and deep expectancy. May you compost the grief of our own bodies. May you accompany the wounds within our heart and the wounds in the world around us. Embolden us to stand on the ground upon which we stand and to weep with Creator sets free in both wonder and holy anger. May we cry with Creator sets free, have you forsaken us? And may you meet us in the mess of this night. Amen.
Forsaken me, oh God, have you forsaken me? Forsaken me.